In Idlib province, look, Idlib province is the largest al-Qaeda safe haven since 9/11, tied directly to Ayman al-Zawahiri. This is a huge problem.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. As that opening clip demonstrates very clearly, it's almost shockingly apparent how much the United States government and governments in general rely, bank on the fact that people have a very short memory. The reality of seeing the State Department themselves openly state the fact that Idlib is dominated, if not the strongest ISIS stronghold in Syria, less than a year ago. And now to hear them say the exact opposite today, when it suits their political agenda, completely demonstrates that fact. And of course, I'm going to play that clip as we go on later in the T-Lab Research and Review following this show. But for those that didn't see it, feel free and skip back and watch it, because it's very important to recognize such an obvious contradiction, which I could make an entire show of the contradictions, even from months ago, of things that the U.S. will say now and then do later and vice versa, and completely contradict themselves. And what we're seeing now take place in Syria is no different. And it is a very important event of which they need to control the narrative. And that's what we're seeing take place today. It's very important for them that we see it as the last rebel stronghold as CNN continues to aggressively push forward, instead of the terrorist, U.S.-backed terrorist-held area that it truly is, that the Syrian government's trying to fight to claim back its own sovereign territory from. Very important that we recognize that. For the very first story of the day, which chimes in exactly with that video, which is actually where I saw it first, coming from ZeroHedge.com, entitled "The Truth About Idlib," in the State Department's own words. Again, now the video very clearly laying out the fact, this is from the State Department saying that Idlib is a terrorist-held area, if not the strongest-held territory of ISIS territory in Syria. Point blank. But they pretend that didn't happen today, which I find incredibly interesting and incredibly revealing. So on Friday, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo issued a statement ahead of the imminent Syrian government and Russian campaign to liberate Idlib from jihadist control. And Pompeo said via Twitter, quote, "The 3 million Syrians who have already been forced out of their homes and are now in Idlib will suffer from this aggression. Not good. The world is watching." Well, you're right, Mike. The world is watching. The reality is those 3 million Syrians have been forced out of their homes by the U.S.-backed terrorists from the area, which is very easy to verify when you actually take a moment and step back and look at the history and have a memory that's not as short about a week today. There's a lot of information to back that up. But it's interesting how he didn't even say that. He just simply said that they will suffer from this aggression, which you could take it meaning that their aggression as well. But clearly, he means to place that around the Syrian government in their efforts to reclaim their own sovereign territory that was taken by the U.S.-backed factions. Both Washington and the mainstream networks are gearing up for a possible final U.S.-Damascus-Russia confrontation in the response to Assad's military action in Idlib, representing the Northwest province as, quote, as I said, the last rebel stronghold, where Damascus simply seeks to apparently massacre civilians for no real strategic reason. But Washington officials often contradict their own past positions, and this is glaringly clear in the case of Idlib, where we just showed Brett McGurk, the White House-appointed anti-ISIS envoy who essentially acts as the president's personal diplomat in Iraq and Syria through the State Department, describing the true situation on the ground in Idlib. At the time, McGurk's comments were aimed at NATO ally Turkey, which he accused of facilitating jihadist entry into northern Syria to displace the U.S.-backed Syrian Kurdish SDF. Said, quote, "The approach by some of our partners to send in tens of thousands of tons of weapons and look the other way as these foreign fighters come into Syria may not have been the best approach." Again, very clearly interesting how the narrative changes based on the political agenda at play. Of course, when it means to demonize Turkey in regard to their efforts to stop the Kurds, oh, Idlib is the most terrorist hell faction in Syria, but now it's different because it suits their agenda differently and their hopes that people won't pay attention. McGurk added that al-Qaeda has, quote, taken full advantage of Turkey, allowing for the free flow of arms and jihadists across lengthy border with Syria. Of course, McGurk neglected to mention that the U.S. was a willing partner in all of this throughout the Syrian war, Syrian invasion, if you will. And it is easily verifiable today that they long sought regime change in Syria and used this, as they have numerous times in the past, in an attempt to accomplish exactly that. But of course, as I said, the State Department hopes that Americans have very short memories per their programming over the years and just forget about the words that were just shown, that were spoken. Think about that. Let that reflect as we go through the rest of the stories and how they actively try to manipulate you about the current events and hoping that you simply just don't look back at what they said before. In the same vein of thought, coming from the next story from antiwar.com, discussing something from the Obama administration and how it directly relates to what's going on today in regard to Syria, entitled U.S. Strategy in Syria, Create Quagmires Until We Get What We Want. Sounds very similar to what's happening today, because that is what's happening today. But interestingly enough, this stems from before, according to numerous statements by U.S. officials. Interestingly, even quoted by mainstream media such as Washington Post in 2013, top Obama administration's officials described their policy in the Syrian war as one of keeping the war going, which officials clarified meant ensuring that the war kept going so there was never a clear victory for Syria. And today, as the U.S. is clearly losing in its long-sought goal of regime change in Syria, this appears to be the exact same strategy being employed by the Trump administration. U.S. officials were quoted recently saying, quote, right now, our job is to help create quagmires for Russia and the Syrian regime until we get what we want. Now, of course, this is coming from some mainstream sources on officials that aren't to be named, so take this for what you will. But regardless of this statement, we know that this is the effort of the past, and we can very clearly see it taking place today. So whether this was done in the vein of trying to make Trump look bad or not, it seems pretty clear that this is the reality on the ground, as they're losing in an illegal war, an illegal occupation of Syria, and it seems like their goal is to make whatever happen possible to maintain their last stronghold and keep things destabilized. Seems very clear to me, but take that statement for what you will. Now, this is essentially now, they have, really, for U.S., in regard to the entire thing, it's essential for them now to have a dominant position in post-war negotiations, which is why they're saying that. So they can ultimately dictate the form that the post-war Syria takes, knowing that they can't essentially win this war. This means ensuring that the Syrian government doesn't win outright, which is currently translating into the U.S. coming to the rescue of al-Qaeda to keep the war going, which truly is nothing new for U.S. policy in Syria, as the U.S. has protected ISIS strongholds, actively bombed Syrian troops fighting ISIS numerous times, and even evacuated ISIS troops to safety more than once, which we've shown on this show every single time, all absurdly under the guise of fighting ISIS. How that works out, I'll let you come to your own conclusions. U.S. repeatedly is threatening Syria and warning them not to attack Idlib, as we recently reported, not even in regard to the chemical weapons accusation, simply Heather Nauert saying if you attack Idlib in general, that you'll be held accountable. Very clearly playing into this, and going back to the very first thing we talked about in this show today, that they know Idlib is a terrorist-held area, if not the strongest ISIS compound in Syria today. And yet they're saying, don't attack them or we'll attack you. Very, very revealing. And of course, the next thing is U.S. is continuing to threat that they'll intervene if chemical weapons are used of any kind, which just seems superfluous when you realize they're threatening to attack regardless. But the chemical weapons, it seems obviously they're trying to set something up. Keep that in our minds. Chemical weapons, warning about chemical weapons. We know this is a false flag set up, and we've seen it in the past. We've had evidence support so far to date from months ago, showing they've been preparing this. We have the evidence of the chlorine gas tanks being brought in, being presented to the United Nations, being presented to the U.S. themselves, which they immediately, without even 24 hours notice, just disregarded. Very clear here. U.S. officials have even privately conceded that there is no sign Syria is making any moves to even ready such weapons for such an offensive. And we also know that by their own past admissions and of the U.N. themselves, all such Syrian weapons have been destroyed, confirmed by the OPCW. Yet several times a week today, the U.S. is issuing statements with allegations of a chemical plot, preparing Americans for yet another unjustified attack on a sovereign nation. Or as the U.S. coined phrase, a preemptive counterattack. However they can make this make sense. The reality on the table is they are protecting their terrorist factions in Syria to prolong the war, to create a quagmire per their own statements, to essentially create any kind of a conducive situation for U.S. control. That's it. It's all there on the table. Past statements, current statements, the reality of the situation. Really have to let that set in. And make sure and spread this with people that might not think otherwise. It's very, very clear. If you simply have the eyes to see it. Moving on to the next story, coming from MiddleEastEye.com. A very important story, actually, in regard to something we've been covering for weeks, if not months, if not since 2015. This one very revealing in the way that they're now responding to the things that we've been calling out for a very long time. Entitled, Saudi-led coalition admits mistakes were made in deadly Yemen bus strike. Well, we knew that already. We've been talking about this for since the day it happened. We've been talking about this, these kind of things since the 2016 funeral bombing, since they were bombing civilian infrastructure since the beginning of the war. But it's very interesting to see this happen now, in my opinion, very clearly because of the pressure put on them by the independent media, or rather on the U.S., which then put it on Saudi Arabia. But there's more to this story. This is a very interesting development. Now, in a surprising turn of events, truly surprising, Saudi Arabia and the UAE have admitted that the bombing of a school bus in Yemen last month, which killed 51 people, including 40 children, was, quote, unjustified. Yet maybe not all that surprising after the negative attention both they and the U.S. received due to the independent media determination to bring this to light. And the U.S. pressure on the Saudis that followed that determination. Now, none of this was thanks to the mainstream media's willful failure to do their jobs in this regard. Even though both the U.S. and the Saudis defended the attack on the school bus as a legitimate military target, a probe by the U.S.-backed coalition concluded on Saturday that, quote, mistakes had been made in the August 9th air raid in Sadr province, yet absurdly ignores the attack on another bus that killed 22 more children the very following week, which I continue to point out is completely absurd, that they will ignore this, at making a focus to somehow make amends on the past one because they got more attention. That's the reality of it. That one, this one, the one you're looking at, got no attention by the mainstream media, and so they don't feel obligated to respond. Yet again, showing this has nothing to do with right and wrong or the lives of innocent children, only politics and controlling the narrative. That's what we have to recognize here. That's what it really comes back to. Now, because this one did not get as much attention, we've talked about the Joint Incident Assessment Team, the JIAT or JIAT. Now, they said that those behind the bombing of the school bus that killed over 40, yet ignored the one with 22, that they should be held accountable. Yet, as we have pointed out more than once on this show, the Saudis routinely make promises they do not deliver on after the press coverage dies down. We pointed out how they promised to send all these millions of dollars to help the Yemeni people, and of course, they just never followed through. They just never did it because they heralded them as, look at how great the Saudis are trying to help, and the moment the media coverage died away, they just never followed through. So we've even talked about this in the past in regard to the JIAT and how they've very, very, very rarely followed through with any of the accusations they've made. So until this actually comes to fruition and people are actually held accountable, I'm not holding my breath, as they've done this numerous times before. In addition, as Al Jazeera points out, if you look at the actual wording of their response, they're not saying that there was a problem with killing children, which I find very important. Talking about this last article we discussed where Mohammed bin Salman actually said that he wants them to shiver for generations when they hear Saudi Arabia, vowing to continue targeting children, not target children, but continue targeting children. Very important. So again, Al Jazeera pointing it out that their wording is that they didn't really have a problem with the children. It was just the context around this. They continue to say, quote, what they are saying is that this attack shouldn't have taken place when it did, because they were targeting Houthi leaders. And they say their intelligence pointed in that direction, but those Houthi leaders at that stage did not present a threat to Saudi-led coalition forces. And therefore, that operation shouldn't have happened. They say that intelligence was passed to the pilot who fired the fatal missile, but it never got there in time. Ultimately coming back to the fact that if this was in fact somehow connected to Houthi rebels, the killing of 40 children would have been legitimate. But the context around it is what they now realize, yes, we made a mistake. The Houthi rebels were not in fact in control of this bus full of 40 children. We just have to understand how this is really being played out. This is them grudgingly saying this because they're being forced to, because people are beginning to pay attention, which again is due to you guys out there making this happen. But it's crazy to see that mark my words, the media will praise them for doing this and then never follow up and nothing will ever happen as it has in the past. But let's hope somebody actually gets held accountable. But that doesn't take into account the other bus full of children or the hospitals being bombed or the blockade causing starvation or the forced cholera epidemic in the country. This is just a placation to the people beginning to pay attention. Now, with all of this, we must never forget, as it is our tax dollars being used here, that the U.S. has been the biggest supplier of military equipment to Riyadh, to Saudi Arabia, with more than $90 billion of sales recorded between 2010 and 2015. And the arms deal that was made between Saudi Arabia and the Trump administration is set to exceed $300 billion over the next decade. Let that really set in. Understanding that this is, according to The Independent, including restocking and future commitments, that it really comes back to over $350 billion over the next decade. This is the group that we're talking about today, that they're bombing children, hospitals, civilians, routinely calling them out saying, I'm going to continue to bomb children. And yet we're arming them to the teeth. That really has to resonate with us today. And of course, it comes back to our perception, the narrative, the control of the narrative. Moving on to the next story coming from southfront.org, entitled Multiple Explosions, Rock Meza Airbase Near Syrian Capital. Now, this is an interesting development. This story is being put forward a couple different ways. The explosions at this airbase are certain. This did happen. The videos in this article make it very clear, but some are reporting this differently. This is an interesting development. And we've seen stories like this go back and forth before, so it's important to be skeptical and keep an open mind and be objective to the information you're hearing and think about how things have turned out differently in the past when they were presented one way to begin and turned out to be something else afterward. So early this morning, several explosions rocked the Meza airbase northwest of the Syrian capital of Damascus, according to local sources, and all the videos we have now seen, which is confirmed. As a result of the explosion, several ammo depots and facilities inside the airbase were destroyed, causing massive explosions. Several Syrian sources claim that warplanes of the Israeli Air Force conducted airstrikes on the Meza airbase. These claims were backed by the fact that the same airbase was targeted several times by Israel over the last few years, making it seem very likely that this was yet another Israeli attack on Damascus, an unjustified crime, international crime, when you really break it down. Now, however, hours later, a military source told the Syrian Arab News Agency that the explosions were caused by a technical failure. According to the source, a short circuit caused a fire in one of the airbase's ammo depots. So at face value, it seems like, okay, the Syrians themselves came out and said, yes, this was not an Israeli attack. But we have to remember that even in the past, for whatever reasons, Syria themselves have denied attacks that turned out to be Israel. There's a lot of politics involved here. Maybe to save face, who ultimately knows? But it could simply just be what they say. However, an interesting story that was reported on from Syrian Analysis in a recent video entitled Breaking Israeli Airstrikes Against Damascus. And it's reporting the same videos, actually, but interestingly enough, it seems like they have footage of actual missiles coming through the air. So as always, come to your own conclusions. But as Syrian Analysis reports this, he reports Israeli airstrikes from the Lebanese airspace against Meza Airport in Damascus. Apparently, martyrs were reported. The Syrian Army Air Defenses intercepted several missiles before reaching their destinations in Meza Airport. Now, he goes on to note, despite our credible sources confirming the narrative of the airstrike, a Syrian military source says the explosions in Al-Meza Airport were due to an electrical failure. So basically saying that his sources on the ground, multiple, have confirmed that there were missiles. However, they're now seeing from Syrian government that that's not the case. So I wanted to present all the information to you so you could come to your own conclusions. But make note that we have been misled in the past, for whatever reason, both from Israel and from Syria themselves. So this wouldn't be the first time that Israel just struck out against Syria. and is completely ignored by the UN and by the United States and everybody. So make sure we'll keep track of this and let you know how it develops. But it has changed in the past. And my gut would tell me it seems like probably yet another provocation by Israel. But we have to take them at their word at the moment. Moving on to the next story coming from mintpressnews.com entitled Civilian Death Toll from U.S. Strikes in Syria and Iraq. 1,061 official. 6,575 to 26,224 according to Air Wars. Now, this is a topic we've discussed many, many times. And the reality of the misrepresentation of really all things, whether we're talking about bombings taking place or how many jobs or the economy in this country, aggressively manipulating whatever numbers they can to put forth the best view. We've known this. It's been verified numerous times over. But in regard to civilian deaths, this is a very touchy subject. We've talked about this many times, from just point blank lying about what's happening to arbitrarily deeming everybody in a given area as combatants, regardless of whether it's a civilian area or not, so they can just deem them all combatants and ignore that they killed hundreds of civilians. It's happened numerous times. But in this regard, this article, very well written as usual by Whitney Webb, is showing us how dramatic the difference is between independent organizations and the U.S.'s own numbers. So on Thursday, the U.S.-led coalition published a casualty report that has drawn extreme criticism from independent watchdogs and human rights groups for severely underestimating the number of civilians killed by coalition airstrikes in Syria and Iraq. Now remember, this is just Syria and Iraq. Plenty of other places out there being bombed at the moment by the United States. And this is since the operations began in 2014. So nothing before that either. According to the official figures made public by the coalition, officially known as the Combined Joint Task Force of Operation Inherent Resolve, quote, at least 1,061 civilians have been unintentionally killed by coalition strike since the start of Operation Inherent Resolve 4 years ago. The recently released figures count only reports of civilian deaths deemed credible by the coalition. The coalition has often been accused of rejecting the vast majority of reports in order to make the civilian death toll appear lower. Sounds oddly similar to what we're dealing with in Saudi Arabia. Very interesting. 15 of the last 18 reports reviewed by the coalition were deemed not credible, as only 3 were accepted. Of course, the 3 accepted reports had the lowest civilian death tolls, only 1 in each incident. Not very surprising. In addition, 216 reports of civilian casualties in that same time period are currently pending, and thus were not included in the official figures. Very interesting. 216 other reports. Even if that's 1 person per report, that's 216 civilians just currently pending. So they don't include them. Many regular viewers of this show would likely not find it surprising in the least that the civilian casualty figures released by the coalition are significantly lower than estimates made by independent groups, such as the UK-based watchdog Air Wars, which has estimated that a minimum of between 6,575 and 9,968 civilians, a minimum, have died as a result of civilian airstrikes. Air Wars has also noted that the overall total of alleged civilian deaths resulting from coalition strikes, the overall ranges between 17,674 and 26,224. From 6,000 to 26,000, dramatically more than simply just over 1,000. Amnesty International themselves has recently rejected the coalition's report, the figures on civilian deaths, stating that the coalition is, quote, deeply in denial about the large number of civilians killed and injured by coalition strikes. Coming from Amnesty International themselves, not that we should take them at face value or anybody else, but we must realize here that this is a growing understanding of not just that civilians are being arbitrarily killed by the U.S. and its allies around the world, but that they are lying about it as aggressively as possible and regularly. Really must sit with us, knowing again that it's our tax dollars being spent to murder these civilians around the world. Moving on to the next story and the final story of the day, coming from RT.com, and really does give us an insight into what the U.S. truly wants while they're continuing to tout the concept of seeking peace. And I'll tell you a secret, it's not peace. Article entitled, U.S. Military Blocks Proposed Railway Linking North and South Korea. Interesting story here. I mean, obviously anybody that continues under the guise of how North Korea is this evil maniac you know all the propaganda, which we've shown routinely is not necessarily true. Not to say that he's this bastion of truth and freedom, but the reality of what they put forward, just like they're doing with Iran, just like they're doing with Assad, is not, in fact, the truth. And now in this case, they're taking every possible step they can to hinder any peace process developing between these two countries. And why they feel that they have any control over that should be beyond all of us. So U.S. military officials have put the brakes on a proposed rail project that would connect the Korean Peninsula, exposing the growing differences between Washington and South Korea on how they wish to move forward. One clearly seeking peace, the other prolonged tension and war. The governments of North and South Korea were set to begin plans for the rail link last week, but their application to send a train from Seoul across the length of North Korea was denied by the U.S.-led United Nations Command. The multinational military body, which traces its roots back to the Korean War, controls movements across the demilitarized zone, which separates North and South Korea. Interesting, too, why when they're seeking peace, that they still need to maintain what they're calling the demilitarized zone, which you could argue is quite the opposite now, as they're the ones stopping them from seeking this peace. And remember, the Korean War, which this dates back from, was the one in which the U.S. carried out indiscriminate carpet bombing of the entire nation of South North Korea, killing men, women, and children alike, until, by their generals' own statements, they ran out of bombs, this resulting in the killing of almost 20% of the population. This is historical fact. We've talked about this many times before. And then ask yourself maybe why they're a little hesitant to deal with the United States. I mean, the decision in the latest illustration of Washington's hardline approach to dealing with Pyongyang is very revealing here, to understand that everything they're doing is to stop any kind of a peace process. As I've been saying since the very beginning, that they're very clearly putting the stick in the spokes in every way possible as these two countries try to find their way. The U.S. has demanded full denuclearization as a prerequisite to any economic cooperation with North Korea, while Seoul has taken a less extreme stance, favoring constructive engagement with its northern neighbor. North Korean President Moon Jae-in had expressed hope that the rail link would be completed by the end of the year, as he's invested considerable political capital into improving inter-Korean relations and has signaled his desire for large-scale investment in North Korea once the sanctions are lifted, continuing to show that he wants something to change. We have to recognize how this is moving forward and how this plays in regard to China, that the United States is simply seeking its strategic foothold in regard to a military stance in preparations for whatever military aggression they continue to seek out around the world. And ask yourself if this represents you as an American, or those of you not in the United States watching this show, if this demonstrates what we want for the world, that these people who have hijacked this country from people like us, the real Americans that actually want some kind of semblance of peace and order and not continuous nonstop war around the world. Is this what we want? Can we sit back and just allow them to strong arm them into maintaining war or tension at the very least while they're actively seeking the opposite? It's strikingly clear here. And again, from the very beginning of this episode, understand that they do not want you knowing about the past Korean War. They don't want you thinking past last week. They want you hyper-focused on whatever propaganda story they're putting in the mainstream propaganda outlets to keep you distracted and arguing amongst yourselves, so you don't recognize that Idlib is a terrorist-held province. You don't recognize that they're stopping peace around the world or invading countries illegally. We need to begin to push this forward just like we did with Yemen, nonstop. Fight for peace, nonviolently. Push this out there as often as possible and as much as possible. Thank you for tuning in today. Make sure you check out the sources in the show notes below and stay tuned for TLAV Research and Review following this show on this very screen where we will continue this conversation. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.